trailhead thoughts on me. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men wonder. Can't you hear that thunder? You better run, you better take cover.
From somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, now an evening I've been waiting for, underground bases and tunnels, and much more when we come right back with our guest, Dr. Richard Sauder, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, beginning in early childhood, Richard Sauder experienced first-hand contact with a variety of paranormal phenomena that have left him a bit puzzled and thoroughly persuaded that there is much more to the earth and to human perception and consciousness than the mainstream American culture believes. Some of Richard's favorite research and reading, his interests are underground and underwater bases and tunnels, electronic mind control, freedom technology, human prehistory and remote antiquity, the Kundalini energy and alternative thought patterns. His underground and underwater bases and tunnels research commenced in 1992 and continues to this present day. He's got a BA degree in sociology, an MA in Latin American studies, an MS in forestry, and a PhD in political science. He is the author of three books, Underground Bases and Tunnels, What the Government is Trying to Hide, Kundalini Tales, and Underwater and Underground Bases. Tonight, our special guest on Coast to Coast AM, Dr. Richard Sauder. Richard, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, George. I'm doing very well. I'm so happy to be back with you again.
It's been almost 2 years. Can you believe that? How fast time flies.
Time is flying. We must be in a time warp or something.
You have been working on one of my favorite subjects. I am just fascinated with the underground, underwater bases and tunnels. And you seem to be, Richard, one of the only people on the planet doing a lot of work and research in this area. There aren't a lot of others like you, are there?
No, there really aren't. You might say that outside of the military-industrial espionage complex, I don't have a security clearance. And I'm not seeking one. I've never had one. But you're right. Outside of the actual agencies and organizations that design, build, operate, and maintain these kinds of facilities, there are very, very few people who look into these policies.
When we talk about underground bases, and we're going to get later on tonight when we open up the phone lines, people have been talking about hearing hums and things going on underground, which I think you can answer for them. But when we talk about these underground bases, are we talking about man-made or extraterrestrial-made?
You know, that's a good question, George. And certainly we're talking about man-made bases. There are a good number of those. I cannot tell you the precise number. I'm not sure that anyone can, because by their very nature, if they're made secretly, those who make them would do their very best to conceal their presence and what is done in them from others. So it's very hard to say how many there are, but I'm getting the feeling that there are quite a few. And by the way, not only in North America, but really all around the world. Now, as you raise the issue about possible bases underground built by so-called aliens,
right,
or extraterrestrials, and let me tell you, there certainly are many stories, many anecdotal accounts, and I keep hearing new ones with respect to these kinds of alleged facilities. And I have to say, George, in all candor, that I believe there must be something to at least some of these stories. I don't believe that all of the people who have come out publicly with these kinds of stories and anecdotal accounts are just spinning tales and confabulations. I think at least some of them, and maybe even most of them, have some truth behind the stories. I think we're living, in a certain sense, in a dream world where we have very careful facades of propaganda and illusion that are spun out for us, whether it's by government or by institutional religion or by academic institutions or by the culture at large, to tell us the way things are, when in reality the way things are is oftentimes objectively at severe variance with the way that we're told they are. And it calls for discernment to see through these smoke screens. You know, we're born into, so to speak, a hall of mirrors. Where up is down, left is right, yeah. Black is white, right is wrong. And a mature person needs to be able to think analytically and sift through all of the confusing data and information in order to determine what is really going on, and that is not an easy task.
No, not at all. And sometimes we need to think out of the box, too.
Yes, we do. And we're doing a little bit of that this evening. I could not have predicted to you 20 years ago that I would be talking about this on the radio this evening with you. You had never heard of me, and I had never heard of you.
True.
And I haven't given one thought to pursuing this kind of research. It had not even crossed my mental horizon. And so, you know, life takes strange turns as you go along, George, and sometimes you end up doing things that you never anticipated at all.
Well, and I learned, Richard, the hard way, that you don't fight those turns. You simply go with the flow.
You know, you have to, because yeah. It's interesting, for one thing, and if you get stuck in a rut and want to persist in a rut, oftentimes, you just bog down deeper in that rut.
The path that got you following these underground bases and underwater bases, I mean, how did that happen? Because that's not something, like you said, you just say to yourself, I'm going to research this, and I'm going to dive probably most of my career into this arena. How did you get into this?
Well, first of all, let me say, don't do this full time. This is like an avocation. It's
sure.
Something I do on the side. Though I would hasten to add, this is not something that you will do at all in just a couple of leisure weekends. It takes a lot of concerted effort, a lot of time, a lot of digging to find nuggets of information and data, pertinent documents. I think I could track my interest in things that are going on underground all the way back to the first grade, George. I won a spelling bee in the first grade, and the teacher gave me as a prize a book about caves and spelunking. And man, that really fired my imagination. But for many years, I didn't pursue that. It wasn't until I grew to adulthood and through a sequence of events that I could not have forecast, somehow was brought face to face with the knowledge or the idea that there are clandestine, covert, secret underground facilities and tunnels. And this is something I knew next to nothing about when I ran up against it in the late 1980s. I had moved out to the southwestern part of the United States, and I encountered people who were talking about this, and really it was the first time in my life that it had happened to me. And the stories and anecdotes that they were throwing around really caught my attention. And I looked into it after a few years. I had a block of time that opened up in my schedule, and so I devoted some time to looking into this. And somewhat to my surprise, I discovered indeed there are underground bases. I didn't know what I was going to find.
How do you even start to investigate something?
Well, you
like
know
that?
What you have to do. What I did is, number one, I talked to a lot of people. And I found out so-called ordinary people, though you and I both know there's really no such thing as an ordinary person.
True.
But just in talking to people that I encountered during the conduct of my everyday life, I was surprised to discover that there are a lot of people in this society who have bits and pieces of knowledge and information about all kinds of things that you wouldn't suspect unless and until you engage them in conversation. And one of those things, one of those topic areas, happens to be the subject of underground bases, and as I more recently begin to understand, also underwater installations. But initially, that was the case. People were giving me pieces of information. And I also found that there's nothing like a really good research library or document collection, such as you will find most frequently at a major university. And I think virtually every state in the country has at least one or two good major research libraries, frequently, though not always, connected with major universities, whether public or private. And so virtually anywhere you go in the country, even in a rural western state, for example, or a small northeastern state, New England, you can find usually one or more good research libraries. And once you learn how to research, you can go in to document collections, look through various types of databases, article reference guides, article finding aids. You can burrow into archives, whether they're federal archives, state archives, or private archives. There is literally a treasure trove of information out there to sift through. The main thing is it takes a lot of time. It does take skill. I have four academic degrees, and in the process of getting those degrees, I learned a thing or two about research, George.
Absolutely. And you found how to connect dots.
Connecting dots is key. That's an important point. I'm glad you raised it. What happens is that if you looked at my home study, you would literally see bookcases. I have, you know, three, four bookcases sitting around, heavily laden with books, articles, documents, and filing cabinets bulging with files, and tables with papers and files and books and articles stacked on them. What happens is, after you've been at this for more than 10 years, as I have, and any other researcher will tell you the same thing, you accumulate a body of literature, of information, of data in the area that you're researching and investigating, and things that you don't notice at the outset. Let me tell you, you sure do 10 or 15 years down the line.
Yeah, and you know what? You seem like the kind of person, researcher, you don't throw anything away, do you?
No, I don't, especially if it's good. And the other thing that happens is you sort of get a nose for what may be useful or what may be meaningful data or information and things that are just noise, so to speak. I can't really tell you how that happens other than to say it's through practice, long years of practice. You sort of get a feel for when you've found a nugget or diamond in the rough, so to speak.
Give us an overview, if you can, before we dive into these bases, literally, of what they are, Richard. They're secret bases. They're built for a reason, probably all around this planet, as you said. What are they?
Well, before I do that, let me preface my answer by saying there are a great many of underground facilities that are not clandestine or covert, that are well known. We may see them in movies. Occasionally see them mentioned in books or magazines.
Like NORAD and things like
exactly.
That, right? Okay.
Yes. And the Mount Weather complex that FEMA runs in Northern Virginia outside Washington, D.C. Those kinds of things are out there, and there are more than two or three of them.
Which is smart, by the way, for a nation to do.
Yeah.
Because you need that military protection.
Well, the thing is that there's a great deal more than that.
Right.
And we don't know how much more, whether in the United States or elsewhere. The problem you get into, George, with the great secrecy that surrounds these facilities is, who's running it? What are they doing?
Yeah.
Whose money are they using to build them?
Right.
Whose technology? What's the purpose? Who's down there?
How big are they?
How big are they? How many people are down there? And on are the projects being done for us or to us? And how do you determine that? So there are great problems that arise with this overweening secrecy and clandestine veil of really, it's an airtight kind of hermetic seal that you virtually can't penetrate, and it's only with great effort over a period of several years of sustained research and trying to pry into that and find out what's going on that I'm even able to have a meaningful conversation with you about it. And that bothers me. What I can say with complete confidence is that indeed there are secret underground facilities, and information that I've been getting indicates that they're undersea facilities and bases as well.
Now, when you say, though, let me ask you this real fast.
Yes.
When you say undersea, are you saying there's like a bubble over whatever this is?
I mean down in the bedrock beneath the sea floor.
Oh, my God. You mean underneath the sea floor of the ocean there are other bases?
That's the information I'm getting, both from documents that I've gotten from open sources. I don't have any classified documents. I do have some that have been declassified, or what archivists would call sanitized.
How would they build something like that?
Well, the technology, you mean down under the seafloor?
Under the seafloor, yeah.
Well, the technology for doing that has been around for the better part of half a century. From my reading of the documentation from the United States Navy, by the way, but way back in the mid-1960s, 40 years ago, there are three ways at least that can be done. Number one, you have to understand that the drilling equipment and technology that the petroleum industry has is extremely powerful and extremely sophisticated and very large. If you're not around that kind of thing, you don't understand how huge these drilling rigs are, how powerful they are, the exquisite control they have, thanks to modern electronic technology, guidance mechanisms, mm-hmm. and digital technology, and how deeply they can go, and the size of the holes they can make. It's mind-bending. It's just astonishing. So one of the ways to do it, and I'm not saying the petroleum industry necessarily does this, I'm saying their technology, whether or not they would be directly involved, could be used to do this. You bore a hole in the seafloor, making a diameter 5, 10, 15, 20 feet, whatever you want the diameter of the borehole to be. You sink it down maybe 50 or 100 feet, and then you bring in...
Now, that would fill up with water, obviously.
Well, there would be water down there because the ocean is full of water, but that's not a problem. What you would do then is bring in a huge steel cylinder, probably stainless steel, because it wouldn't corrode in the seawater, with thick walls. And this is well within the capacity of heavy industry to make. They make big cylinders like this all the time for a wide variety of uses. But this cylinder would have an airlock on the end. You follow me?
All right.
So you would then, using huge winches, lower this thing down in there and fit it into the hull, and then cement it into the hull with special quick-setting cement or grout that works well underwater. And once you have that thing cemented in there very tightly, what you would do is put men and drilling equipment through that airlock. And you would dewater. Well, you wouldn't have to dewater it because you would pump the water out before you put the men in, using valves that would already be built into the cylinder. Then you would put men and equipment through that airlock, and the first couple of guys you would put through would be crackerjack mechanics. Now, we all know people who are really good with machinery. You give them a set of wrenches and some tools, and we've all known guys who just tinker with cars, and they're good at it.
Yeah.
Well, some people are just mechanical geniuses. It comes to them naturally. You would put a handful of guys like that in this big thing, and then put sub-assemblies of boring machinery or excavating machinery in there with them. They'd They bolt this stuff back together, and off they would go, it's enlarging.
It's like an undersea space station, basically.
That's what it would be, yes. And the machinery for doing this has been around since, at least since the 1960s, if not the 1950s. And the information I get indicates that this has been done. I might add, George, that many, many UFOs have been seen coming and going from seas and oceans all over this planet.
That is true. Stay with us, Richard. We'll continue talking about these secret underground bases, what their purpose may be, especially what's the purpose of making one under the seabed. I mean, why would they want one there? Let's find out when we come back.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com. Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
A couple more days to go. The After Dark CD is available to you right now, where you get a double CD, bumper music, unforgettable calls to the show, ghost stories. But time is ticking. You can order it by going to afterdarkcd.com. That's a website, www.afterdarkcd.com, or call this toll-free number, 1-800-598-2331. That's 1-800-598-2331. And welcome to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our guest, Dr. Richard Sauder. His website, by the way, is sauderzone.com, S-A-U-D-E-R-S-Z-O-N-E. That's S-A-U-D-E-R-Z-O-N-E.com, linked up to coasttocoastam.com. Richard, before we get into some of the big reasons for why these bases, why would they even want to build one of these things underneath the seabed of the ocean?
Well, I can think of a couple of reasons. Number one, extreme security. Think about it. There are very few people who enter a facility uninvited coming through a couple of thousand feet of water.
Yeah, that's true.
Very few private individuals, very few agencies or organizations, period, would have the technology, the vehicles to get down there. So right away, you maximize your security perimeter. Now, I'm not saying that that has to be a military concern. We could be talking, suppose you're a powerful financial institution, for example, and you have very valuable commodities or currency or paper or precious metals or whatever that you want to secure. That could make a very highly secure facility for you. Another reason could be just secrecy. beyond physical security. If extreme privacy is a concern of yours, you would also, for the same reason, find that very few people, or anyone, or anything, would be bothering you. Another reason you might do put a facility there is for ease of transportation. It may be that you would be involved in some industrial process, such as mining, something that might be down beneath the sea floor, or you might be tapping energy, for example, geothermal energy. You might want to put a power plant in such a location and generate power to be distributed remotely to other facilities elsewhere. So there could be a number of reasons for doing something like that. Another reason I can think of is that if you wanted to conduct an operation and keep it separate from what the mainstream, so-called mainstream society is doing, whether in North America or any other land mass around the world, and segregate yourself, so to speak, from the great mass of humanity, then one of the best places to go would be under the sea to give yourself insulation. And I don't rule out, George, that there may be other groups on the planet who are doing that, and they don't have to be necessarily extraterrestrials.
That's true.
They could be terrestrials. I don't know, but what we might not have, what you might call one or more parallel societies in activity, in circulation on this planet besides us. Now, exactly who these people or beings might be and what they're up to, I don't know. By the way, it need not be bad from our standpoint. It could be that they're more or less indifferent to us and just don't enjoy interacting with us and so hold themselves apart. I'm not saying I know to the answer to that sort of question, but I can conceive of those sorts of concerns on the part of other beings who may be here and who may be, by the way, human beings, but not part of our society per se.
But you are convinced that the secret underground bases are being built by humans, by us.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I don't rule out that there could be other human groups on this planet or inside this planet that we don't know about. Certainly myth and legends from around the world suggest it as a possibility, and even going back thousands of years. Also, I don't rule out that there could be other groups from off the planet, maybe exotic-looking aliens, if you will, or maybe rather human-looking beings much like us, who are also carrying out activities here both under the surface of the land and beneath the seabed. In fact, as I read more and more literature, I am prepared to keep the door open for more than one of those scenarios. I think an awful lot is going on, and I suspect that the situation may be even more complex than I think it is.
Are there some, Richard, who just simply, let's say, they can't handle the sun, and therefore they need to live underground?
Well, that may be. You know, if you read, for example, read or talk to some of the Native American groups in the Western states, I'm thinking in this case of the Hopi, for example, their their national law, because they are a group of people who've been here for thousands of years. But their law, their traditional law, says that there are periodic periods of cataclysm on this planet that in the past have destroyed entire planetary civilizations, and that during these periods of destruction and cataclysm, that they have gone underground. And in fact, at the time of the last round of cataclysm and geological upheaval, the Hopi will tell you, and I've heard this story myself, that they were living underground with the ant people. Now, who are the ant people?
Who are the ant people? Yeah.
I don't know who the ant people are. But that's the story, and I'm inclined to think or to wonder if it may not be, at least in broad outline, literally true as told. I suspect that there's quite a lot underground, and some of it may have been there since ancient times. I mean going back thousands and thousands of years. I suspect that in the post-World War II period, when our modern civilization has done quite a lot of underground excavation, a good deal of it clandestine, I'm wondering, George, if some of these projects haven't broken into very ancient underground workings that we haven't been told about.
You may be right. I'm still convinced, Richard, that we have found the Hall of Records, for example, that Edgar Cayce always talked about.
In Egypt, you mean?
Absolutely. I think they've been found. Now, he also said there was one in South America.
Yes.
And that may have been found, too, and I don't think they told us what they were.
Well, interestingly, if I've read a good deal of Edgar Cayce over the years, and if I recall correctly, the Hall of Records in the Americas that he mentions is under the Gulf of Mexico, just north of the Yucatan Peninsula. Am I correct in that?
It is...
And there's another one he said...
Well, I think it's in South America.
In South America.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, there's another one he said is in the area of the Bahamas. And then the other
around
one...
Around Bimini.
Yes. The other one he said was in Egypt in the vicinity of the Sphinx, under its left paw or something like
that. Right,
right.
And I think that's been found.
Well, let me tell you, I was recently in Egypt. I spent 10 days there. I had a great time. I love the Egyptians. I love Egyptian food. I have to confess, I ate a lot of it. And I really enjoyed seeing that those ancient monuments. And one of the first impressions that I had was that whatever I learned in school about ancient Egypt, I'm prepared to pitch much of it right out of the window, because I realized immediately that this culture, in my estimation, is much older and extends...
Oh, absolutely.
...extends far...
Maybe twice as old. Maybe. Minimum.
Twice as old as we've been told.
Yeah.
And I saw the pyramids, not just the three at Giza, but a fair number of others. And I was just blown away. If people listening tonight or this morning, depending on where you are, had never been there, let me tell you, it is mind-blowing to see these massive monuments in person. And, George, I don't believe there were guys wearing loincloths, dragging on ropes, moving these incredibly, stupendously huge stone blocks up the sides of these steep pyramids, 300-400 feet in the air. I don't believe it.
Well, maybe that's why all of us, Richard, think that they were 10,000 years old, not 5, because it would have taken them at least 5,000 years just to move one block.
No, I think that there was an advanced technology in remote antiquity that we don't know anything about anymore.
Maybe it left? Who knows?
Maybe it left. One of the things I noticed in ancient Egypt, because of my research, is plenty of evidence for underground tunnels and underground chambers. For example, when I was at, some of your listeners may be familiar with the so-called Djoser Pyramid or the Step Pyramid at Saqqara. And I really enjoyed this site. When I was there, I saw evidence for massive underground openings in the immediate vicinity of the pyramid. The tourists are not permitted in those places, but I did some research, and I found out that at the immediate pyramid complex of Saqqara alone, there's something like 3.5 miles of tunnels that the Egyptians excavated in the solid rock beneath that pyramid thousands of years ago, and they don't let people go down there. I would have loved to have taken an extensive tour, but I saw evidence for underground openings and tunnels and air shafts. At first, it took me a little while to realize, my God, these are air shafts and big ones, and deep, by the way, and very well made. I was on the group I was in had an engineer in the group, not publicly known, and I don't think he desires for me to mention his name, so I won't. But I discussed this a little bit with him, and I was talking with him, and I said, these are air shafts. And then he said, yes, air shafts, but you have to think also of the possibility that we're looking at ancient elevator shafts. And I said, of course. How else are you going to get down there?
That's right.
And I now understand that indeed there was a very advanced technology on this planet many thousands of years ago, and there's some kind of cover-up on, George.
Well, there's talk that the pyramids, all of them, are on top of other huge structures that are buried so deep underground that they haven't even dug yet.
I have a lot of questions. I had some questions when I went to Egypt. Some of them were answered, and in their stead, in their place, I now have even more questions. I took the tour, so to speak, on the Giza Plateau, and I don't even know where to begin. There are so many anomalies on the surface associated with the pyramid itself, the pyramids themselves, with the actual plateau, things around the plateau you see, what to speak of the air shafts, which to me were transparently obvious air shafts. And no one ever mentioned them to me. I had to go and see them for myself, George.
No, and Zahi Hawass will never mention those to you.
Well, we don't need to talk about Zahi much this evening. I don't know him, and
He's just a booster for the Egyptian government. I mean, he's doing his job. He does it well for what he's supposed to do.
Every government has, let me choose my words. Every government has people who, spokespersons, let's put it that way.
Exactly. Some people would call them PR flacks. Who knows? But that's what they are.
Let me
throw out some reasons for the bases and tell me if I'm close or not.
Yes.
And the next hour we'll really dive into these things.
Right.
Possible reason. They know we're going to get hit by an asteroid and they're trying to cover themselves. Possible?
You know, this has been hinted at by some people I've talked to. And sure, I think it's possible. The problem I have with that is I think that we're being played for fools, George. I see a lot of evidence that we may be moving into a period of geological upheaval right now. If you noticed, there was a massive, massive earthquake on the fringes of the Indian Ocean the last week of December. And the planet hasn't stopped rumbling since.
No, they're even saying now that it may have affected the gravity of the planet.
It had
incredible.
A lot of effects. That was a massive event. And what people need to realize is it may only be a precursor of things yet to come.
It may have been the small thing to come, you know,
yes.
as big as it was.
There may be even bigger events and more earth-shattering events to come. And it's certainly, I think, conceivable that behind the scenes, the powers that be are establishing arcs for themselves, or so-called ruling elite or selected elite, but not for you and not for me and not for the vast majority of people listening to the show. And this is one of the problems I have with establishing these underground arcs. Who gets selected? What are the criteria?
And that's absolutely... Well, here's another possibility.
Why am I slated for certain death, but
somebody
the president's
else
daughters will live on? I don't... Shouldn't we have some kind of lottery if that's the case?
What about the possibility that they're going to pop a plague? You know, we've heard that the elitists, the globalists,
yes,
whoever they may be, would love to get the world's population down from 6 billion to 500 million. What if there's a plan that they're going to spray us all, but they're going to go underground first, and then it happens?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. You know, you can spin out these hypothetic scenarios. And the problem is, because the extreme secrecy that surrounds this whole policy area, we don't know.
We don't know.
And we're left fumbling in the dark, literally. I think it's, if it's, I guess it's dark where you are, it's dark where I am. And so we do our best to try to figure out what's going on. I assure you something is, something big, and it's massively funded. There are huge sums of money that have been lavished on these things in high technology. Another thing, George, another possibility is the waging of nuclear warfare.
I was going to say, and that to me would be the obvious reason to build these things.
Yeah, but there again, I have a problem with that. It may be that in the very construction of these facilities, the so-called ruling elite or military elite, political elite, may be emboldened to wage nuclear war, feeling that they can do it and personally survive. And that could be a dangerous calculus to make, whether it's a military or political calculus, the feeling of invincibility that I can call down hell on earth, but I and those around me will survive so it won't touch us.
Well, when we know they all disappear, Richard, we're going to know something's going on.
Well, and that bothers me because there are certain ones in the ruling elite who do disappear from time to time. I'm thinking of Dick Cheney. This is a guy who just drops off the radar for weeks or months at a time. You don't see him, you don't hear about him, then he pops up for a few days, a couple of weeks, then boom, he's gone again.
Didn't his neighbors complain about some kind of what we thought might have been underground tunneling under his residence?
Well, yes, and that was more than his neighbors. I spoke at the X conference hosted by Steve Bassett.
That was last year, right?
No, that was just this past weekend.
Oh, this one. This one. Okay.
And we had a great time. It was a great crowd, a lot of energy there, and we had a wonderful time. I believe he's going to have it again next year, and I recommend to all your listeners, if you enjoy this conversation, you should look out for the X conference in the spring of next year. But anyway, I gave a couple of talks, and I sold my books and hobnobbed with the crowd who stopped by my book table. And I found some interesting information about that just from people stopped by the table.
Hold on to that. Let's talk about that right at the top of the hour and then much more about these secret underground bases, why they're being built. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with our guest, Dr. Richard Sauter, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
This part of the show, listen online with StreamLink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Choose your leaders and place your trust as their lives wash down in that promised rest. This kidney machine replaced by rockets and bombs, and the public gets what the public wants. But I want them to decide it's got going.